Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone, and joining me now is a good friend of Living Lab Radio, Jenny Roan. She's a cell biologist at University College London, founder of the science advocacy group Science is Vital, editor of LabLit.com, and a novelist in her own right. Jenny, good to talk with you. Your novel is out now, right?
It's very exciting. It is indeed.
Well, so tell us a little bit about that book.
The book is called Cat Zero. It's a tale set in present-day England about a young and upcoming female scientist who's mired in this sexist institution where she has to deal with sexual harassment on a daily basis. But nevertheless, she keeps a good sense of humor until the topic of her research, which is an obscure cat virus, starts to bubble up amongst cats in the United Kingdom, and cats start dropping dead and people don't know why. And suddenly she's cast into the center of this very, very strange mystery story involving dying cats and this really strange virus that nobody ever thought would be relevant anymore. So it's kind of a story of a scientific whodunit. There's a little bit of romance, it's a little bit of a thriller, but at the heart of the novel is a lot of really great science about viruses, which are just weird and wacky organisms that are forever surprising us. Viruses should never be underestimated.
Well, we asked you here today to talk about some possible sciencey summer reading, not sciencey in the sense of necessarily nonfiction, learning more science, but actually novels that feature scientists. So that's one to get us started. And then you've got another one to recommend called Chemistry. Tell us about this one.
Well, I'm recommending Chemistry first because it's a new novel. It's just been published. It's just out in paperback. It's a really fantastic book. It's a story of a nameless protagonist, another female scientist, who's doing a PhD in chemistry, and it's not going very well, which is, in fact, pretty much par for the course for most PhDs. It's set in Boston in the present day, and Boston is quite well known amongst scientists as being a real pressure cooker place to do science. It's really hardcore, it's competitive, it's aggressive. And she's not coping at all well in the environment, and in fact ends up bombing out of the PhD with some mental health issues. And it sounds like a real downer, but actually this book is hilariously funny. The narrator has a beautiful, clear, lucid voice. I laughed out loud pretty much on every page at her observations. And although it's about depression and about sort of slogging through these terrible situations that she's in, you're really with her 100% of the way.
So hitting on some issues in the sciences as well as the science itself, but then you've also got some books to recommend for pure summer escapism. So what's in that category?
It's a book called The Devil's Garden by Edward Dachs, and it's set in the Amazonian jungle. So yes, it's very hot and steamy and summery. It's got a great atmosphere for a summer read. It's pure escapism, a really wonderful tale about some ant scientists who are in a field station in the middle of the jungle in South America. And, you know, they've just got their head down studying these ants, and they almost don't even realize what's going on around them, which includes a corrupt militia. We've got cocaine runners, exploitative oil companies who are manipulating the politicians of the country. And then you've got these poor indigenous tribes stuck in the middle, and all this stuff, these bullets whizzing over their head, and they're just, you know, sort of scientists trying to study their ants.
Completely stereotypical scientists oblivious to everything except for their ants.
So there's a little bit of a Heart of Darkness feel here, but I was actually captivated by the science, which turns out to be totally true. The Devil's Garden, the title of the novel, refers to an actual scientific phenomenon, which are these ants in jungles that systematically devour every single living plant except for one species of tree, which is the tree they like to nest in. And it forms massive sort of circles in the jungle, really absolutely massive, that are made up of just one tree, and everything else is nuked. And I think it's a really interesting idea and very nicely written, lots of great science, but ultimately it's a thriller and it's fun and it's exciting.
Sounds like a great one. All right, tell us about The Night of Mirage.
This is by Zoe Ferraris. Now, she's an interesting author. She spent a lot of time in Saudi Arabia, and this book is set in Saudi, and really an eye-opener if you know nothing about that country, like I didn't. So If you're a woman in Saudi, you really are completely restricted. I guess people know this, but until you read a story about it, you don't really sort of encapsulate what that would feel like. So we've got this woman who's called Katja. She's young, she's sort of ambitious. She wants to be a forensic scientist, and she's trained as far as she can in Saudi, and she's working in a sort of a forensic science lab with a bunch of other women, not really allowed to interact with the male scientists very much. And she's really frustrated by the situation, because to get ahead in Saudi, you have to take the kind of jobs that involve you working next to men, which you're not allowed to do. And meanwhile, she runs into this man called Nayir, who's a really traditional Saudi man, but is very intrigued by Katja, and they end up sort of spending this novel and the next two novels, because it's a trilogy, sort of fighting with the idea that they actually like each other despite their differences. So it's a great set of stories, all three of them. They're really good. They're murder mysteries, sort of in the classic police procedural sense. But it's got this added element of, you know, this hidden world of Saudi.
All right, next on your list, God is an Astronaut by Alison Foster. Another love story, maybe?
Well, it's kind of a love story gone wrong. Well, we have basically Jess, who's a botanist in Michigan. She's a classic academic, very sort of geeky. And she's pining away for a colleague called Arthur, who has recently left the department, although Jess is married to somebody else. So,
Love triangle.
The entire novel is a series of letters or emails from Jess to Arthur. So we never get anyone else's point of view. And these emails are incredibly detailed. This author's gotten some criticism along the lines of, nobody writes emails this literary and detailed. But I was happy to suspend my disbelief on that point. They're beautifully written emails. And the entire novel sort of we're inside Jess's head. She's very introspective. She's very indecisive. And she's always thinking and not usually doing. So the only thing she is doing, which is really funny, she's digging a hole in her back garden. She has this idea to make this amazing greenhouse. And every chapter we see her out there just digging, but she never finishes the greenhouse. She buys all these plants, she never puts them in. Meanwhile, things are just going wrong around her. And it all culminates with her going into space. I don't want to spoil it, but very, very interesting novel.
Well, I think I like her already, and it will certainly be easier to suspend disbelief about overly detailed emails than it would be to actually have somebody writing letters in this day and age. So, you know, maybe trying to walk that line there. Next up, Apple Tree Yard by Louise, is it Doughty?
Yeah, I think it is Doughty. I chose this novel. It's really an example of a novel about a scientist that has absolutely nothing to do with science, but I chose it for a reason. So it's a typical thriller. It's a courtroom procedural, really well done. At the very beginning of the novel, we find out that Yvonne, who's a middle-aged female scientist, is on trial for murder. And the novel is a series of flashbacks where we find out how she got into the situation. So she's a really prominent scientist. She's, you know, giving evidence before the Houses of Parliament on scientific issues. She's got an amazing family, an amazing husband, prestigious job. And then one day she encounters this man who she thinks is a spy and just starts having an affair with him. And then it all just sort of spirals downward into this terrible situation she gets herself into. And I don't want to give away any spoilers. But the reason why I'm talking about this book is because it made quite a splash in the UK. It was made into a BBC drama. And people were all saying, gosh, scientists committing murder, that's so strange. And my reaction was, that's very, very strange reaction to think that a scientist wouldn't commit murder. Why wouldn't a scientist be in the dock for murder? What is it about scientists that people think they're so pristine and inhuman? And it sparked a lot of dialogue here. Is it strange to see a scientist, you know, being sort of human? I don't know what you think, Heather. I mean, I was really shocked by how shocked people were.
It's so unusual, as you've pointed out, to even have a scientist as a job choice in the main character of a novel. You know, yeah, why would a scientist be any different from anyone else? You could, you know, fill in the blank with any other job there, and maybe people wouldn't be surprised. So it is kind of funny that people would take such note when it's a scientist.
In fact, the BBC, when they were advertising the drama, they billed her as a doctor, almost as if they couldn't bring themselves.
Don't say the word scientist.
They preserved her profession for the adaptation, but when they advertised it, they didn't call her a scientist. I don't know if they thought it would put people off, if they thought, oh my God, there's science in this drama, or if they just thought, well, it's a bit strange. I don't know.
That's an interesting one. All right, last but not least, Remarkable Creatures by Tracy Chevalier.
So this is reaching back a bit into the archives, but I picked it because it is a beach read, quite literally. It's about Mary Anning, who was a Victorian fossil hunter, and she was instrumental in finding several dinosaurs that had never been found before, including the first ichthyosaur skeleton and a few others. And she spent a lot of time leading famous men around, showing them where to look. And then these famous men would go and publish their famous papers and be celebrated at the Royal Society and all these places. Whereas poor Mary Anning, who always wanted to write a paper, was never allowed to. She was never celebrated. I mean, she was appreciated. She got footnotes from these great men saying, thank you to Mary Anning for helping me out. But she didn't get to do anything. And I think Tracy Chevalier is a great author because she's obviously really good at getting into the heart of a historical location and really bringing it to life. And she did a great job here.
So is this fiction or nonfiction?
It's fiction. It's a novelized biography is the best way I would put it. It reads like a novel, and she's made a lot of stuff up. She's freely confessed that in the afterword. That she's made a lot of stuff up. There's a romance in here that never happened, for example. And this is one of several examples of historical lab-lit fiction where it's about a real-life person, but the author's taken a lot of liberties and made it read like a novel. And I really like that format. A lot of people don't like it because they don't know what's real and what's not real, and that frustrates them. Personally, I'm happy to just go with the flow. And in fact, at the same time I was reading this book, I was reviewing an official biography of Mary Anning. And oh my God, the Tracy Chevalier version was so much better. I could see what was real and what wasn't real because I was reading a real biography. And you know, you didn't lose much by having the fiction there. It just made it better.
That is Jenny Roan. She is a cell biologist at University College London and editor of LabLit.com. She had some summer reading suggestions for us. And if you would like more along those lines, check out LabLit.com. Jenny, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me on the show.
And that's our show. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.